Good evening. Joe Biden says lives are at stake as Trump botches the transition. Schools stay open in New York City. A Trump rally in D.C. ends in violence. Traffic deaths challenge the thin blue line, and a first in space. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with the WBAI News for Monday, November 16th, 2020. A second experimental COVID-19 vaccine, this one from Moderna Incorporated, yielded strong early results Monday. According to preliminary data, Moderna said its vaccine appears to be 94.5% effective. A week ago, competitor Pfizer Incorporated announced its own vaccine looked 90% effective. The news comes as virus cases topped 11 million in the United States over the weekend, 1 million of them recorded in just the past week. And President-elect Joe Biden met with several business and labor leaders on Monday. Afterwards, he gave a live address on the economy, but the first question was about the Trump White House failure to share its vaccine distribution plans.
What do you see as the biggest threat to your transition right now, given President Trump's unprecedented attempt to obstruct and delay a smooth transfer of power?
More people may die if we don't coordinate. Look, as my chief of staff, Ron Klain, would say, who handled Ebola, a vaccine is important. It's of little use until you're vaccinated. So how do we get the vaccine? How do we get over 300 million Americans vaccinated? What's the game plan? It's a huge, huge, huge undertaking to get it done, prioritize those greatest in need, and working our way through it, and also cooperate with the World Health Organization and the rest of the world in dealing with this.
Biden says he understands Trump's reluctance to admit defeat and share plans, but he calls it a shame. And as Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer announced a three-week pause to save lives, closing colleges, high schools, workplaces, and in-person dining, White House coronavirus advisor Scott Atlas responded with his own call to action, urging residents to reject the state's public health guidelines. Closer to home in COVID-19 news, Mayor Bill de Blasio says despite an alarming rise in cases of COVID-19, New York City's public schools will remain open for business, at least for now.
We made a promise that we would set a gold standard for safety in our schools, that we would provide every conceivable measure, whether it's face coverings for all students and staff alike, social distancing, ventilation, constant cleaning, so many measures. 10 kids in a classroom, typically, things you couldn't have imagined. All of those measures together have kept our schools safe, but we also said that we would hold to a 3% threshold. We said that to give people confidence that we would put health and safety first, and we have put health and safety first, and we will put health and safety first. So we're sticking to that threshold. And I believe there's still a chance to fight back this disease and keep our schools open for a good while ahead. But if that is not our reality, if in fact we surpass the threshold, then we will have the immediate effort to get schools back and get them back quickly.
The seven-day average for citywide COVID positivity rates hit 2.77%, still short of the 3% cutoff that, if reached, could close city schools. Meanwhile, advocacy groups are calling on Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins and Assembly Speaker Carl Heastie to hold an emergency session of the state legislature to enact a COVID-19 relief package. A federal relief package benefiting New York may not happen until February at the earliest. At the top of the advocates' list, a universal eviction moratorium, aid to small landlords, elder parole in state jails, and higher taxes on wealthy New Yorkers. And Donald Trump appeared to acknowledge for the first time that Joe Biden won the White House on Sunday, but added he would not concede and would keep trying to overturn the election result. Trump, without using President-elect Joe Biden's name, tweeted he won, something Trump had not said before publicly, adding the victory was only in the eyes of the media. Arkansas Republican Senator Asa Hutchinson said on NBC, "I think that's the start of an acknowledgment." Meanwhile, Rudy Giuliani, Trump's personal attorney, took to television and denied Trump was conceding. No, 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 he said. Far from it. Meanwhile, the Biden administration continues its attempts at facilitating a transition without certification from the General Services Administration and opposition from a White House unwilling to face its electoral defeat. But the managing editor of the website Shadowproof, Kevin Gastola, says the folks Biden is looking at to fill his government on January 20th look like more of the same.
I look specifically at the histories and records of the individuals that are being invited to plan out how these agencies are going to operate, like the State Department and how intelligence agencies and the Defense Department are going to work, and to really point out what these people have done. And some of the people that I highlighted were the ones that are coming from think tanks that are funded by weapons manufacturers like Raytheon and General Dynamics and Northrop Grumman, or looking at people who were at the State Department who were involved in things like the decision to wage a military campaign against Libya and how that developed into a disaster. Certainly, we know that Susan Rice is a leading candidate for being the Secretary of State, and she has a lot of people in and around her circle that are providing input to how the State Department will function. And they had an interventionist ideology about them. So I highlight people who believe we should have an occupation, a military occupation that continues in Syria. And separate from that, I looked at the people who are on the Justice Department review team, people who were involved in the record number of leak prosecutions against whistleblowers under President Barack Obama, and how even one individual, Neil McBride, who was the U.S. attorney in the Eastern District of Virginia, he was responsible for empaneling the grand jury investigation into WikiLeaks. And currently, we see this unprecedented prosecution against the WikiLeaks founder, Julian Assange. And a lot of press freedom groups are looking at that case and wondering if the Joe Biden presidency is going to be one that allows this to continue, because it was started by President Donald Trump. I noted that Marty Lederman, who is someone who came from the Justice Department, he authored the drone memo that gave the legal basis to the administration, that outlined what he thought was a legal basis to kill Anwar Awlaki, who was, as much as he was an extremist who could be tied to advocating for terrorism acts, he was still a U.S. citizen and was targeted in a drone strike in Yemen, opening up this new era in warfare around the globe where the U.S. could execute people from the United States without charge or trial. That is something to factor in. We see people who have connections to allowing surveillance to expand and infringe upon our privacy. It connects to many of the issues that NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden exposed. And so yet you see someone like Bob Litt, who was a top lawyer for the intelligence community. He was constantly trying to downplay the revelations from Edward Snowden and to make it seem like the intelligence agencies hadn't done anything that wrong or scandalous. And also, he was out there saying that James Clapper didn't lie to Congress, when in fact we know that he was asked by Senator Rod Wyden whether the agencies, the NSA, was collecting metadata from Americans' phone records. And he scratched his bald head and said, not wittingly, and he was lying about it. The people who are being invited into the circle really tell you, I think, about what the Biden administration will be like and how difficult it's going to be to really move them in directions that we see as progressive.
Kevin Gastola is managing editor of the website Shadowproof. Meanwhile, thousands of President Donald Trump's supporters descended on Freedom Plaza in Washington, D.C. on Saturday. They were treated by a presidential drive-by as Trump was chauffeured to his private golf course in Virginia, as speaker after speaker denounced the election results and vowed to stop the steal. With hundreds of counter-protesters, confrontations were expected. Hey,
fists flew between Trump supporters bedecked with American flags and red hats emblazoned with Trump's slogan, Make America Great Again. Among Trump's fans were members of the right-wing hooligans known as the Proud Boys, who wore shirts with the motto, Stand Back, Stand By, uttered by Trump during his raucous first debate with President-elect Joe Biden. One sign read, WWG1WGA, meaning where we go one, we go all, a trope of the shadowy conspiracy movement known as QAnon. Representative-elect Marjorie Taylor Greene, a vocal QAnon follower recently elected in Georgia, spoke at the rally.
So here's what we're going to do, everybody. We're going to show the swamp how real Americans work and act. Right? All of us together are about to march to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court where this very battle may be won. And I thank God that we have the majority, right? But as we're moving on, I want you to remember we also have a big battle brewing in Georgia. We're fighting for our Senate seats. We're in a runoff. So we need everyone here to engage in Georgia and help us save our Senate seats. Because in Georgia, if we save our Senate seats, we save America and we stop socialism.
Representative-elect Marjorie Taylor Greene. Despite legal challenges by the Trump campaign, it's expected the states will have certified their results in time for presidential electors to vote on December 14th. According to the Associated Press, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have 306 electoral votes, more than the 270 needed, while President Trump has 232 votes. 306 is the same number of votes Trump won in 2016, which at the time he called a landslide. Apparently, most painful to Trump supporters who are disputing the outcome of the election is that the vote for Biden was called by conservative outlet Fox News, earning angry denunciation at the Trump rally on Saturday.
Fox News sucks. How bad is Fox News now? What the hell happened? What a disgrace. They are the enemy of the people, and I have a message for the enemy of the people, the fake news media. You do not decide who the president of the United States is.
Conservative speakers alternated between denunciation of media as purveyors of fake news and apocalyptic fears of creeping communism. The founder of the website Reagan Babe is Megan Barth.
I am not going to watch my country be destroyed from within by the communists, by the Marxists, by the socialists. In the Democrat Party.
And a black Republican, Paris Denard, claimed African Americans were switching to Trump by record numbers, despite the president's crushing loss among black women voters.
No matter what the media says, there are over 72 million people who aren't going to be silenced. We aren't going to hide. We are going to loudly proclaim that we support President Donald J. Trump. Lower taxes, deregulation, support for the unborn, and expanding our party with the president winning the most votes for Republican from minorities since 1960.
And Latinos for Trump CEO Bianca Garcia crowed about the Republican success among Latinos in her home state of Texas.
Let me tell you, our heritage was at the Battle of San Jacinto, was at the Battle of the Alamo. Mexicans were the first to get the Medal of Honor. And if you think that we're going to stop fighting now for our freedom and liberty, you got something coming. Four more years! Four more years!
Second-tier media celebrities abounded. My Pillow guy Mike Lindell is a perennial on late-night shopping networks.
The radical left and Democrats are trying to steal the election and the future of our country. And I'm going to tell you about them. They're very good at marketing and brainwashing and deception. I'll give you two examples because I'm a marketer. Planned Parenthood and Black Lives Matter. What do they have in common? Here's what they have in common. They're both deceptive. Planned Parenthood, it sounds like a politically correct name. Well, when you find out that Planned Parenthood is killing your babies so you don't have to be a parent. And Black Lives Matter, of course their lives matter, but when you look behind the curtain and you see the organization behind it has been suppressing and trying to destroy them for 50 years, that's what they do.
The marchers began their trek to the Supreme Court on Capitol Hill from Freedom Plaza to the tune of the Trump followers' unofficial theme. Later that night, the streets were filled with crowds of Trump supporters and anti-Trump protesters. Some marched with a black and white version of the United States flag with a blue stripe, symbol of the police, and the slogan Law and Order, as they chanted, Back the Blue, meaning the police. About 20 people were arrested, several guns confiscated, and one person stabbed and left seriously injured as police attempted to keep the two groups apart. One of the protest organizers is Sansara Taylor of the group Refuse and Resist. She's also a programmer on WBAI.
There was probably more than 10,000. It was a significant outpouring. It was not a million, nothing close to it, but it was significant. And these were people who were cheering for Kyle Rittenhouse, the teenager who shot dead protesters for Black Lives in Kenosha. This is a hero to many of them. They were Christian fascist fanatics carrying signs that say women belong in the kitchen. These were people who were straight up revenge-filled and very violent and out for revenge, supporters of Trump who were given his backing, and it's very dangerous. So even though they lost the election, which is very important that we stand on, and we see that all the way through, Trump is trying to overturn that, and he had a rally of more than 10,000 people in the nation's capital behind that. And that needed to be politically opposed. And we were out there, refusefascism.org, to say, no, the election is over. Biden won. Trump lost. He needs to go. And we don't want this white supremacy and hatred of immigrants and women to dominate in the public square.
You were trying to march down a street together, and there was you were sort of like swarmed by a bunch of these people?
Yes, I was in the middle of that. We raised the banner in the middle of the morning in the broad in Freedom Plaza out in the public square. Trump tents out now. We put our signs up in the air, and we're immediately set upon. And this was a mob. I mean, we were surrounded by hundreds, and that's not an exaggeration, hundreds of MAGA fascist supporters. First, they were shoving us, then they were grabbing at us, and they, you know, at times you had multiple men grabbing you at the same time, yanking you in different directions. Some of them, one of us was punched. There was, you know, our equipment was destroyed, but we kept, as the Washington Post said, we kept regrouping and breaking out of the crowd and chanting, Trump, pack your illegitimate, you know, Trump, Pence out now, because, and they didn't, they broke our signs and our equipment, but they didn't break our spirits, and we were there because this has to be stood up to. There's never been a time in history in this country or around the world when a gathering mob, when a hate-filled movement that's becoming battle-tested and marauding, where ignoring it makes it go away. You have to stand up to it.
Where do you get the courage to go confront it?
The courage comes from the fact that yes, these people are scary in their physical manifestation, but all they have is their intimidation and their terror. They don't have the truth. They don't have right on their side. They don't have the masses of people on their side. And it works as long as it works. And we stood up to it because we know that we speak for and we were giving voice to the sentiments of millions. And if you want those millions to come forward and back into the streets, which we poured into the streets and danced a week ago, if you want them to come forward again, which we need to, then you have to stand up to this and you have to be an example of that. And I'll be honest, it felt incredible. After we were done with this, we regrouped at BLM Plaza, and people were dancing. There's a lot of joy in standing up and standing for the people of the world and opposing this bigotry. And yes, it was scary at the time, and that mob was dangerous. And people should take seriously. They marauded into the evening. They destroyed Black Lives Matter Plaza. They tore down the murals. They broke them apart. They assaulted different people. This is dangerous, and Trump loves it. And he's still in power. Yes, he should be on his way out January, but even sooner than that, if right was to prevail. But he's still in power and can do great damage, and this can't be ignored. When you win a victory against a fascist movement, you don't lay low. You run the table with it, and that's what we were trying to do, and we still are. We have to come back. We have to be in this public square. We're doing protests every Saturday going forward to maintain that we refuse to accept a fascist America. White supremacy, theocracy, patriarchy, xenophobia is never legitimate. Fascism is never legitimate. We have to hold on to that and build that.
One of the protest organizers is Sansara Taylor of the group Refuse and Resist. She's also a programmer on WBAI.
And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. A 34-year-old Manhattan woman who was tragically killed when she apparently stepped out from between two parked cars and was struck by a cement truck early last Monday. The accident happened on Bushwick Avenue near Stanwyck Street, a notoriously dangerous intersection in a community with its share of traffic accidents. The community board says there's six crashes a day in the gentrifying neighborhood. Despite Mayor Bill de Blasio's street safety initiative called Vision Zero, activists say not enough is being done to fix New York's traffic nightmares. The Department of Transportation says there have been at least 205 road fatalities on city streets and highways this year, compared to 185 at the same time last year, the most since de Blasio took office. But the story took on another dimension when a reporter showed up to cover the pedestrian fatality story and was surprised to see two thin blue line flags. It was hanging on city property. The reporter says she was told by men at the scene the flags were approved by the community board in Bushwick, prompting State Senator Julia Salazar to tweet a denial. She said, "These flags are repulsive, and they're on public property and shared public space and need to be removed ASAP." In a subsequent tweet, Salazar added, "The racist flags were put up by a property owner who had aggressively confronted a Department of Transportation worker sent to take them down." Meanwhile, on Sunday, City Councilman and Comptroller hopeful Brad Lander said the city would be better off if police no longer handled traffic enforcement. He argues the City Department of Transportation should take over investigating crashes, since cops have a history of racial profiling and giving motorists a pass. Lander said there were about 46,000 hit-and-run crashes in the city in 2017 alone, with 5,000 resulting in injuries. Yet NYPD detectives arrest just 1% of the hit-and-run drivers every year. Today, a reporter asked Mayor de Blasio if he agreed with Lander.
"Various crashes, I want to make sure there's rigorous investigation and follow-through. If we need to put more personnel on that, that's something I'm very open to and something we will come back on and address. I want a very muscular approach by law enforcement to addressing when someone has recklessly harmed another human being. So that's where, to me, taking the NYPD out of the equation actually is counterproductive. Making sure there are enough investigations and rigorous enough investigations and tough enough follow-through by the NYPD and by prosecutors, by the way, is essential. And if we need to put more personnel on that, that's something I'm very open to."
And as Mayor de Blasio, in a statement Sunday, the NYPD said it would continue to work with the City Council toward our shared goal of enhancing public safety. And finally, Elon Musk's rocket company SpaceX launched four astronauts on a flight to the International Space Station yesterday.
3, 2, 1, 0. Ignition.
The space capsule, dubbed Resilience, lifted off atop a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket at 7:27 p.m. Eastern Time from NASA's Kennedy Space Center in Cape Canaveral, Florida. The capsule is expected to arrive at the space station at about 11 p.m. tonight. Among the spacefarers is Victor J. Glover, the first black astronaut to be a member of the station's extended crew. Vice President Mike Pence attended the launch, lauding the Trump administration, while President-elect Joe Biden tweeted the launch was a testament to the power of science. And that's some of the news for Monday, November 16, 2020. The news is produced by Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. From New York City, for the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo. Thanks for listening.